Well, let's return to the escalating diplomatic row between Britain and Iran. Britain expelling all Iranian diplomats following the storming of the British embassy in Tehran.
The Iranian charge in London is being informed now that we require the immediate closure of the Iranian embassy in London and that all Iranian diplomatic staff must leave the United Kingdom within the next 48 hours. If any country makes it impossible for us to operate on their soil, they cannot expect to have a functioning embassy here. This does not amount to the severing of diplomatic relations in their entirety. It is action that reduces our relations with Iran to the lowest level consistent with the maintenance of diplomatic relations.
That's the British Foreign Secretary William Hague speaking overnight in the Commons. France and Germany have also recalled their ambassadors. Tehran says it's an overreaction and it's threatened there will be more retaliation. The new diplomatic low comes after the release of a report by the UN's nuclear watchdog last month, which accused Iran of developing designs for a nuclear bomb. Richard Dalton was the British ambassador to Iran from 2002 to 2006, and he joins you now from London. Richard Dalton, welcome again to ABC Radio National Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
Expelling a country's ambassador is serious enough, Richard, but kicking out an entire diplomatic mission is something else. How seriously do you regard this action?
This is very serious, and it was necessary because Iran crossed the line. Instead of apologizing and giving cast-down assurances that this sort of thing wouldn't happen again, we have the Speaker of the Iranian Parliament and the head of the Foreign Affairs Commission of the Iranian Parliament in effect praising the actions of looters and vandals and rioters. So I think this is an own goal by Iran, as evidenced by the resolution of the United Nations Security Council, the statements from countries like Russia, and the action in support of the UK position by France and Germany and others. Britain's relation with Iran has been rocky for decades, but this undoubtedly is a real low.
And I want to come to those threats of retaliation in a moment, but can we just stay with the expulsion of the whole diplomatic mission from Britain? What does it actually achieve?
It sends a strong signal that if you don't respect the norms of international diplomatic discourse, you can't expect to benefit from them yourself. And I think that's only just. And I'm sure that the British government will have put into its calculations that there could be further action by Iran. But they believed that it was necessary to draw a line. Regretfully, of course, it wasn't something they were seeking. They had to weigh up the fact that they couldn't be sure that British diplomats and their Iranian staff would be safe against the loss of a actual presence on the ground, enabling one to analyse what is going on directly and advise the government back in London.
Well, you'd have to think they wouldn't be safe, given the words coming out of the Iranian embassy, out of Iran, because William Hague has made it clear that he says the government must have known that about the attacks and must have sanctioned the attacks on the British embassy in Tehran. He said it's fanciful to think the Iranian authorities couldn't have protected the British embassy if they'd wanted to. So he's made that allegation. In return, Tehran is now saying it will look to retaliate. He says there will be further retaliation, says Tehran. What does that mean?
I can't be sure. And we'll have to hope that it's going to be possible to draw a line under this at some point, because the tensions affecting Iran's economy are bad. The tensions affecting the region of the Persian Gulf are getting more serious, and this is in no one's interest.
But as we say, just to go on that point of further retaliation, there's already been attacks on the embassy staff and the embassy, and it's been closed down. What possible other retaliation could there be in that situation?
I don't know what they're planning. The fact is that over a number of years now, the Iranians have been squeezing British operations. They've been reducing access for the British ambassador and his staff to Iranian officials. They have rendered it impossible some years ago to continue entirely a mutually beneficial cultural activity, and this represents the interest of a faction within Iran that has never supported having relations with the United Kingdom and who doesn't see the benefit for Iran. And at the same time, they've picked on us because we have been very forward in imposing new sanctions on Iran in respect to the nuclear program.
And this all stems from that IAEA report last month, which suggested that Iran may have been working on developing a nuclear arsenal for much of the last decade, I think, is what the report found. Is that right?
Well, the report from the IAEA didn't tell the international community anything substantially new. What it did do was provide upfront the detail to justify countries who say that Iran has no credibility when it asserts that its nuclear activities have been entirely peaceful right from the start. But the fundamental assessment, as I understand it, of intelligence agencies that Iran has not made a decision to bring together its research and development to create a nuclear weapon, that intelligence assessment still, I believe, stands. So we need to be very cautious about what we allege Iran is up to. It certainly has engaged, particularly before 2003, in substantial research and development with potential weapons relevance. And since 2003, and maybe up until today, they have carried out a limited number of research and development activities.
But
there's an awful lot we don't know.
And if the intelligence agencies are right and Iran has stopped short of bringing that research together, as you say, to actually make the bomb, test the bomb and be armed, nuclear armed in that sense, then it almost feels like this response from Britain and other European countries is perhaps a little dangerous, a little risky.
Well, there is a case for sanctions not affecting the conduct of states in the way desired by those imposing sanctions. If you look at the history of the use of economic sanctions, the counter-argument, which Britain and other countries adopt, is that if you squeeze hard enough, then you do get a result, and that there will be a point where the Iranian government decides that it does wish to negotiate in good faith. What I would say to that is that that's a highly risky strategy, and it's an incomplete strategy if it's not accompanied with proposals as to how Iran can climb off the tree where it's stuck, and proposals to enable the bottom lines of both Iran and United States and its negotiating partners to be met.
Well, Richard, you know the country fairly well. Are there past examples of squeezing hard enough and getting a result out of Iran? Does it work?
No, it hasn't worked hitherto. The policy which we have on the nuclear question is largely unchanged from 2005, and the measures have got significantly stronger. Of course, there is a new element this evening in Europe in that I believe that foreign ministers will be discussing a ban on the import of Iranian oil. Mm. Now, Italy is a very large consumer of Iranian oil, as is Greece. Of course, China is too. So it's not at all clear that a ban would be respected sufficiently widely outside Europe to have a significant effect on the Iranian economy. Moreover, we do claim that we are not intending to target the Iranian people, but an oil embargo would be clearly directed at the Iranian people and might therefore be problematic.
An oil embargo, an Iranian oil embargo by Britain too, well, could that be problematic for Britain and its oil supplies, its energy supplies?
No, because Britain is a minimal importer of Iranian oil or oil products. Iranian oil is largely going in other directions, particularly to the east.
So where do you think this is all heading, Richard?
Well, I'm very worried because of extreme positions being increasingly adopted on both sides. I mean, I don't wish to equate the two sides because Iran is infinitely more to blame because it is not heeded international legal requirements, whether through its non-observance of the requirements of the International Atomic Energy Agency or its flouting of UN Security Council resolutions. But that's not to say that it's possible to question the current strategy on trying to resume negotiations, which has been adopted very much at the urgings of the United States and France.
But when you say you're very worried about what? What do you think? What is the scenario that could emerge that worries you?
The scenario that could emerge is the international community having to make the choice it has hoped to avoid between an Iranian nuclear weapons capability fully developed and what the Americans and the Israelis call the military option, which they say is on the table. Now, the military option would have certain very uncomfortable consequences, and it would, in my view, not succeed in its stated objective of preventing an Iranian military nuclear capability. So I'm worried that we are getting closer to the exhaustion of diplomatic options for avoiding that dilemma of either having to accept Iranian nuclear weapons capability or seeing unilateral and potentially illegal action by the United States or Israel or both to attack.
Let's hope something or somebody can head that off. Richard, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Richard Dalton is Britain's former ambassador to Iran. He was joining us there from London. You're listening to Breakfast. It's 14 minutes to 7.